from a design perspective, being compatible with the neighborhood. It is a mixed neighborhood. It's got diversity of development and housing types in it. All of these photos are of projects that are within three to four blocks of the site, and this isn't including the Bridge Meadows development. It's not including any of the new Columbia development. These are old established developments in the site and newer infill of residential. We did include Bridge Meadows. I apologize. There's also examples of some larger homes that are being developed on the site that are maximizing their site capacity. We did take very seriously the issue of what could be developed on this site in terms of our analysis of compatibility. The ability to develop six homes, and if you've got a family of four to five people in those homes, you're quickly outdistancing the capacity of New Meadows, which we've set at 19 residents. We also believe that because of who our residents are going to be, we've got a disproportional reliance on mass transit and bikes. So I think we feel we've got a lesser impact on traffic and parking in the neighborhood.
What is the outbuilding?
That is a trash enclosure, just a small sitting porch attached to it.
Can I just ask, why do you need on-site parking? Why is that central to the design? I mean, there is on-street parking. There might be other ways to.
We felt it important in terms of a gift to the neighborhood or a recognition of the neighborhood's concern for parking, that we felt it important to have a certain amount of on-site parking.
But there's nothing programmatically that drives that.
You're not required to provide that on-site parking? Are you?
For all the discussion we've had, I don't have the exact answer to
that.
I believe we actually have to have a minimum number of spots on site. I don't think we're totally exempt from parking on this site.
Okay. We'll check with staff on that question.
Okay. And Matt, I apologize. This is an issue that we hashed out a year ago, and I'm trying to remember what we hashed out. But we did feel that it important. In terms of our addressing neighborhood concerns, that we provided a certain amount of parking on site.
Can I just add that there were a lot of very vocal neighbors that were very upset at the idea of there not being parking, and we settled on what was the required amount, not more, not less.
Right, which also had neighbors that were vocally concerned about green space. So they lost, and the people that wanted parking won. So I'm not sure if that was a good bargain, and we'll talk with staff about that.
And we did have neighbors who asked that same question. Why do you have parking on site?
But presumably some of your young adults will have cars that they need to drive to to work, and there may not be enough spaces on the street.
Correct. We also feel it pertinent to our request for an adjustment for the distance. We also feel that it's very important. This New Meadows program was conceived to be a sister program or feeding off of the success of Bridge Meadows and the adoptive families that we have there and the elders that we have there. And so that proximity and the ability for residents of New Meadows to travel quickly and easily over to Bridge Meadows, and more importantly, the residents and specifically the elders to be able to travel quickly and easily over to New Meadows is a key part of the program in terms of developing a sense of community with these young adults, of a community of people who understand what they've been through, understand their background, and are there to help them launch into their life. So that proximity, as Sarah said earlier, is really important in terms of accommodating this program and really building it for success. I believe that is all I have with a minute to spare.
Mayor, I have a question, but could we indulge me for a second and ask their attorney to come back for a moment?
Sure. Would you please?
So thank you for your presentation. There was a comment made by an opponent that I want to give your attorney a chance to answer, because I just would since you do land use work, I'd be interested in your take. She said in so many words that there were now an abundance of non-residential facilities in the neighborhood which were beginning to change the character. Now, frankly, I think typically we don't think about schools and rec centers as being facilities that change the character of a residential neighborhood. In fact, we have residential neighborhoods around the country beating down our door to for us to put a community center or other amenity in their backyard. But she referred to a school, Rosa Parks, Charles Jordan, a church, and Bridge Meadows, and now we're doing New Meadows. So let's take the community facilities out of the equation and say Bridge Meadows has been a success. That's the neighborhood. New Meadows has been spawned from that. If that goes forward, it will likely be a success. At what point do we have to consider concentration when we are, in effect, building on the success of something which, after all, is seeking a conditional use to operate in a neighborhood for which it wasn't initially envisioned? At what point does concentration become a factor that we are required to consider?
Right. Well, I think that that's a really appropriate question for this type of review. It's the reason the city has a spacing standard to begin with that would require that these types of group living uses, generally speaking, be spaced at a distance from one another so you don't have uses that are non-household living uses in character overwhelming a particular neighborhood. What I think is important about this adjustment process is that you evaluate these cases on a case-by-case basis. And so here you have a well-designed proposal, and there is a reason for there to be an adjustment of the spacing standard. You've evaluated all of the key factors related to impacts to the neighborhood. And the fact is that if yet another group living use were to come into the Portsmouth Neighborhood Association and ask for approval, then, you know, you consider that question as these uses are proposed. So where that, do we know it when we see it? Where that tipping point is, I'm not sure. I would submit, however, that in this instance, I think these are two organizations that have a track record of success. This is a well-designed proposal, and in this instance, I think an adjustment is very appropriate.
So I think you make that point very effectively. I'm contemplating that there will be the son of Ridge Meadows, son of New Meadows, where the argument is we're building on success, proximity, shared services. And I'm just trying to get my head around at what point is there a line where we say, actually, no, you're now changing the character of the neighborhood by doing this on an ad hoc basis. And you're saying we should look at these things on a case-by-case basis and apply the criteria. I'm just flagging that at some point in this, I think there is a line that we have to tackle. I'm not sure what it is.
Commissioner, I think you put your finger on it, that it is a discretionary decision, and each one is considered case by case. I don't think I remember two entire pages in the hearings office decision dealing with one criterion on the specific one, and also an in-depth discussion of the definition of large, which comparing it with the what large meant by the same hearings officer in a previous decision. So I think it is something that grows a bit over and over by time, and that's why, as has been stated, that we look at each one and we listen to both sides and make a discretionary decision.
That was an old expression. I went to the fights and a hockey game broke out. And I think here, roughly, the analogy is I moved into a residential neighborhood, and at some point, all these wonderful, wonderful group homes and programs run by blue chip nonprofits started coming in, and we're doing this under conditional use. So we're saying in each instance there is a, you know, we are potentially saying there is compelling public policy reasons to do this. But since an opponent raised the question of concentration, I wasn't persuaded with the concentration argument when she brought Rosa Parks and Charles Jordan in, because I think in most residential areas in the city, they would love to have a high-performing elementary school and a great community center. But here, there is this question in the back of my mind about at what point do you get to that tipping point where you actually are fundamentally changing the character of the neighborhood. So, thank you.
Other additional points you want to make?
Just real quickly, I do want to just – one comment was made by appellant that pertains to Commissioner Fish's comments about when is enough enough, in really making sure we're characterizing this program appropriately. We're not providing treatment. These are not patients here. This is a group living situation. It's not an institutional function. We're providing counseling and training for these young folks. And so in a lot of ways, it is another residential option in a diverse neighborhood.
And actually, Brian, I would say I listened carefully to the opponents, and I didn't hear anyone picking a fight over the people who are staying there or the services being provided. So that's why I'm focused on design, scale, compatibility, and really about how many conditional uses are we going to allow in an area where it then begins to change. I didn't, and I think it's great that you mentioned that, but I didn't really hear an opposition based on programmatic.
I agree, and I was only responding to words I heard. And I'd actually, if I could take a second and add, it's something that I said several times over and went back to the office and talked about. It's actually been a pleasure working with this neighborhood association and the representatives in this case. It's been contentious at times, and it's been a little bit frustrating at times as we've tried to explain the program. It's been a very respectful relationship throughout, and having been in many neighborhoods throughout Portland proposing projects that people weren't really excited about having across the street from them, they've done an incredible job of staying focused on the issues and on the concerns and, quite frankly, throughout the hearings process on the approval criteria. And I do want to compliment them for their work on this.
I just have one further question. Do any of you know whether the Bridge Meadows approval required a good neighbor agreement or required to try to have a good neighbor agreement?
It did.
It required you to have one?
Yes, Commissioner Fish, it did. And Greg Wilhelm, the former president, and I worked on that together collaboratively and created a document that stood the test of time.
And what I'm hearing is that you're very willing to do that in this case also?
Yes, we are.
And so I heard from the Neighborhood Association that should the appeal not prevail, that they were willing to meet as well. So I think we can have some language that would get to that. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So individual supporters of the opponents of the appeal, are there any signed up?
We have two signed up, Kevin George and Kurt Krieger.
Kurt was here as a resource.
Yeah, he was here just then.
Welcome. Good afternoon. My name is Kevin George, and I work for the Department of Human Services as a child well-being program manager for Child Welfare Services. As a part of my job is program and policy development for children, youth, and young adults in foster care, and for developing transitional services for supports for youth, young adults who are exiting the foster care system without a permanent family or a permanent support network as they move towards successful adulthood. I thank you for this opportunity to speak in support of New Meadows, a project to assist young adults transitioning from foster care. In the last 12 months, there were 78 young people in Multnomah County alone who exited the foster care system without a permanent family to provide that ongoing support, safety net, as these people launch into adulthood. Most often, as these young people leave foster care after the age of 18, these young adults move into their first apartment, into someone else's house or apartment with little to no support on how to navigate the world living independently. And most of us have had to fall back on for emotional support, had families to fall back on for emotional support, financial support, or to help us understand what it means when you get a water bill, electric bill, and a rent bill. Most young adults have positive, caring adults, family, and friends to help them navigate this new world of adulthood. As a parent of three young adults currently in this phase of their life, I can fully appreciate the need for positive, caring support in navigating the new world. The young adults from foster care do not have the positive caring support they need so programs such as New Meadows is the right program for them. What is unique about New Meadows is the intentional connections and relationship to supportive caring adults. The community connections to the youth engaged in their own community, and the demonstrated success of peer-to-peer group living in a semi-structured environment. There are other examples in Oregon of young adult transition models for former foster youth. Lane County has Neighborhood Economic Development Corporation has a 12-unit apartment in Eugene transitioning foster youth. Salem has Center Court Commons through Catholic Community Services, and they developed a supportive dorm-style apartment where they are transitioning youth out of foster care. And in the Dalles, the Next Door program has had a model for years assisting transition to adulthood. While these programs have been success, they are also limited to provide these young adults with the intentional connection to supportive adults and fully engage them in their community, which will be a significant component of the New Meadows program. I am most excited about the opportunity to have these young adults learn from and develop relationships with the older population. Often this is where the culture and community values are found and can be passed on from to young adults who do not have opportunities to develop this type of relationship. Respect for elders and culture must be learned, valued, and passed on. The intentionality of the shared living space is critical to the success of this program. The Department of Services has worked with Bridge Meadows and New Avenues for Youth for a number of years and has seen their individual and organizational commitment to quality and services for children and families. New Avenues has been committed to ensure young adults in Multnomah County have options other than the streets to move to adulthood. They have been instrumental in taking a holistic approach to young adults in research, best practice models to develop comprehensive service. The New Meadows Project will not only be a tremendous resource for young adults experiencing this program, but will further enhance the overall positive experience the Bridge Meadows residents and that community. Thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Anyone else? Okay, now there's an opportunity for the appellant.
Kurt Krieger is going to speak.
Oh, sorry. No, Kurt. Oh, that? Okay. Sorry.
Well, I thought he was going to be better.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Kurt Krieger. I'm the director of the Portland Housing Bureau, 421 Southwest 6th, Suite 500, Portland, Oregon, 97204. I wanted to speak in favor of New Meadows and in opposition to the appeal. First, I do want to respect the Portsmouth neighborhood. Neighborhoods that value their neighbors and their neighborhoods are should contest change in their neighborhood. I don't think any one of us would want to live in a community that didn't care enough to raise issues and to press forward their case. But in this instance, we don't think that there's a reason to reverse the hearings and examiner decision. It's also important for the record that you know that we have $1 million from the City of Portland Housing Bureau budget supporting New Meadows, $800,000 for construction and $200,000 for soft costs.
Was that presented at the hearing?
Yes, Carl Dinkelspiel was a witness at the hearing. And he's an employee of the Housing Bureau and a manager of our housing investment fund. The emancipated youth is the term of art in our industry. When foster youth age out of the system. And I always thought it was a little bit of a sardonic term because emancipation talks about freedom, right? But in this instance, freedom in a very tight housing market, freedom without resources, means often that these youth are the most vulnerable in our society. They are victimized and they're often preyed upon by older adults. So group quarters that allow some means of shared costs really helps them succeed in life moving forward. In this instance, the property will have 19 individuals, of which a few will be small children. If it were developed in single family density, which is permitted, there would be a capacity for 6 single family homes. And under the Title 33 definition of a household, one or more persons related by blood or marriage, domestic partnership, legal adoption, guardianship, plus 5 additional people, you could have 6 people per house in 6 homes or 36 total individuals, whose behavior is going to be totally random and up to their own standards of behavior. So by having 19 individuals supervised in a group setting, connected to programmatically by the nearby Bridge Meadows, this is actually less dense than it would be if it was developed as single-family detached homes, which what you're hearing is people want single-family. We believe at the Housing Bureau that the connectivity between the two programs is essential to their success. There is mentoring and role modeling for the youth by the elders nearby. There is staff supervision and double coverage of staff supervision by the two properties, and maintenance and repair staff can respond more quickly to any request to provide repair and replacement needs. So we think that this is overall a good solution to a community-wide problem. And I do want to underscore that these kids are from North Portland. They're not being imported from someplace else.
Thank you.
And Kurt, the question that preceded you from an opponent was, what happens if this program, for some reason, discontinued? We've got a conditional use. You're an investor. The city is an investor in this. What happens to the building?
Well, if they went out of business, I think we would want to secure our lien rights in the property and make sure that another responsible nonprofit were engaged to operate the facility.
Would that come back to us on a conditional use?
Yes, it would have to. If it was a different use, it would have to, a different operator.
You know, we have a regulatory agreement that will run 60 years, so we have, through that regulatory agreement, the means by which to replace
the
operator.
If there was a change in operator or a change in use, would you bring that back to council?
The commissioner in charge, I'm not sure that it would come to council, but the commissioner in charge at the time would have ultimate approval authority.
Well, can you put in the regulatory agreement that the council would be notified of any change in operator or use?
I don't see a problem with that.
I think that just
potential condition.
I just think that gives that gives the council notice. The council didn't. I saw the council nodding or not flinching.
Yeah.
It goes in the regulatory, so that someone has an obligation to tell council if there isn't contemplated change.
So you're just concerned about the operator, or it going to something completely different?
Both.
Because if it was going to something different, then it would have to come back.
If it was a different use, it would have to come back.
I'm just thinking we've got the hook of a regulatory agreement to make explicit that comes to council. We may not be here when that event happens. I just want to have some place where it's memorialized.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Kurt.
We have no opposition to that. Thank you very much.
All right. Is there anyone else that wants to speak? Now, the appellant, you have the opportunity for rebuttal of any of the testimony that you've heard. If you'd like to avail yourself of that, come on up.
I'll just try to cover a couple of points they brought up, although I would love to talk for longer than that. We obviously heard from the other testimony as well as mine. We agree that it's an honorable organization providing an important service to the community. That's not being judged here. That's also not part of the conditions. I'd also like to know, he just spoke that the youth would be from North Portland, but we heard prior testimony from Sean Suib saying that they could come from all over, from other states even. So that was inconsistent. But in their testimony, I didn't actually hear anything about them meeting the conditions, the legal conditions. I didn't hear much about the law. They stated what they needed to have their program work, which was a single building and to be in close proximity to the Bridge Meadows. And I just want to show you on the map, provided the zoning map, this little star I put right here, there's a road here called Trenton. It's just off the map. There's an empty lot there owned by Portland Housing Authority in an R2 zone that would perfectly suit their needs. A person would need to walk a couple blocks in order to reach Bridge Meadows. I presented this to them prior, and they just completely disregarded me. But I think that if they want their needs met, they can do it. They just can't do it with this property. I believe that it's not too much to ask for them to either consider single homes, and this isn't a density thing. This is a character of the neighborhood thing, which is part of what the law says. It's not changing the character of the neighborhood. It's not impactful on the character of the neighborhood. So we would require either single homes or that there be distance between group living facilities. And what Commissioner Fish brought up was exactly my concern. At what point will this concentration be enough that there's finally a rejection of a proposal? And I'd like to point out that the dilapidated property directly across the street, that is owned currently by a property development place. It doesn't look like it does in the pictures anymore. So that's going to be developed. And the property right back here is also being purchased, I believe, by a developer. So bear in mind, there's other properties that this could happen. If we're just continuing to allow it, it's setting a precedent that this neighborhood is a group living facility neighborhood. And the people that bought homes here that spent thousands and thousands of dollars, the neighbors that have been coming to me and coming to the neighborhood association, they made investments in a neighborhood, a single family home neighborhood. And it seems disrespectful to them to not listen to their concerns, to not at least respect maybe making a little bit bigger of a distance or respect maybe having separate houses. If they want their program's needs met, they can absolutely do it. It just would be a couple blocks away. And we're not simply contesting a change to our neighborhood, we're contesting the character of the neighborhood. We want an R5 zone. That's what we, you know, when I bought my house, I looked at the zoning. And I looked, what can people do? And I didn't think that not only would somebody be asking for a conditional use, but also an adjustment. That seems like quite a bit to ask if we're trying to maintain a neighborhood, a single family home area. I mean, I have some time, so I might as well just check if there's anything else I want to say. And I understand that it may be difficult to deny the applicant's proposal, considering their social purpose and that they're doing good in the community. However, it's important that we follow the law regardless of that message. If a proposal does not meet the necessary conditions, it should be denied. The applicant has every ability to create a building or achieve their social message in a way that is compatible with existing laws and regulations. They have that ability, and they can do that. I believe that they will be able to do that, especially with the knowledge of how much money they're getting from Portland Housing Bureau. They are going to be able to build this in a place that's more appropriate, or they can build houses in the land that they've already purchased. I think that's all. Thank you so much for listening to me today. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. So I have some questions for staff, so I'd like to ask Kathleen to come back up and also Kurt Kruger, the other Kurt in the room, because I want to return to the parking issue.
We have some BES people, although not our experts on the issue that has
BES would be a factor here. But, so the key test, one of the key tests in this case, and it's been extensively discussed in everyone's testimony, is that the proposed development would have to significantly lessen the overall residential appearance and function of the neighborhood, right? We've heard from the appellant that they don't believe that the project has, and we've heard from the proponent that they think it does. There are two ways, I would say, in which this proposal is different than the prevailing pattern of the neighborhood. One, it's a bigger building, and two, it has a parking lot. So let me return to the parking lot question. What is the provenance of the parking lot? Did the applicant propose it, and did PBOT approve it, or did PBOT require it?
Kathleen Stokes, BDS staff, and I have actually two or three clarifications, but answering the question about the parking lot, first of all, and I know there was a question like, why are they having the parking spaces? Well, the zoning code requires parking for residential uses and most residential uses. And the standard for group living uses is one space per four residents. So the 19 residents here triggers a requirement for five parking spaces
on site. On site, okay. But let me interrupt you, because PBOT's report that's in the record says at this location, the city's transportation system plan classifies these streets for all transportation nodes, and that local streets provide local circulation for traffic, pedestrians, and bicycles, and except in special circumstances should provide on-street parking. Why are we not relying on on-street parking to meet the need?
We generally look at the code required on-site parking, but it's only one space per residential unit normally, or one space per four residents. Most residential uses generate more parking. We don't require that additional parking for visitors and other people to be on site. That's where the on-street parking can be used. And as far as the questions about the location of the parking area and the alley improvements, Mr. Kruger here has, I believe, some additional information.
I'd just like to make the point, especially since we haven't gotten to our next item yet. The code requires the five spaces Ms. Stokes just said. The applicant did not request an adjustment to that.
I get it. So, no, that's
why are we discussing
that? I wanted to know what the provenance of it was, because Mr. Carlton, understandably, a year later, wasn't sure. So it was our requirements, not their proposal.
Let me try to take a little stab. When we're doing a conditional use review, we're looking at the actual specific use that's proposed on the site.
Right.
Excuse me, Kruger with PBOT for the record. The code isn't exactly prescriptive as one space here, three spaces for this project. A church is a good example. We look at a church and we say, how many people are going to come to this church? What's the congregation size? How many cars are we going to expect? Then we try to determine how many spaces should be put on site versus how many spaces might be used on the street. And we do this kind of discretionary review to determine what's appropriate for that particular use. In this particular case, we felt some amount of off-street parking should be provided so as not to completely use up all the on-street parking. This particular project is going to close two existing driveways that have been there when the PGE substation was there. So we're gaining some on-street parking. We're losing it with the parking space to the parking lot. If the parking lot went away, we'd gain additional on-street public space.
All right. Well, I won't chew on this much longer, but because this may be an issue for our regulatory process, not for this proceeding. But do you look at the context in a conditional use case?
Yes.
So the context that I see when I look at Google Earth is there's 1 to 2 cars per block face parked on the streets of this neighborhood.
Oh,
if this were Northwest Portland, where we've issued 7,000 parking permits for 4,000 spaces, I could understand not relying on street spaces in the conditioning process. But in a context in which typically the parking load is nowhere near this, for future cases, I would hope to see us relying more on
Mayor, on street
parking.
Can I just follow up on this?
I just want to follow up on that point.
Go ahead. I have one to follow up as well.
Because I don't know what time of the day or night
that
was taken. I need to kind of declare it's not an ex parte contact because I haven't discussed this particular case, but I have had dinner both at Bridge Meadows with Ms. Schubert and with Mary Margaret Weber-Wheeler, who was one of the people who gave me house parties to collect $5 bills in one of my elections. So, and I go to the Charles Jordan Community Center a lot as the Parks Commissioner. There's a lot of parking on the street. It's very difficult to find parking on the street.
Okay. Mayor, can I follow up as well?
Please.
Let's say that PBOD's requirement for this particular use was 24 parking spaces.
Right.
Well, we would certainly take a look at that, and that may mitigate against that. That may weigh so heavily in our decision about changing the residential character that could be a deal killer.
Right.
And so presumably under those circumstances, they'd seek an adjustment.
Well, that's why I'm worrying this bone, not only because I'm anti-parking lot, but because we've got testimony in the record that most of the residents of this facility will rely on bicycles and transit for their movement around the city. Yes, some of the staff may drive to it. Did you require bicycle parking, by the way? Given that
there,
that's
there
in the
is
record?
What bicycle parking that is... it is required in the code, and it is being provided through this proposal.
Well, the other thing, Mayor, is if you didn't have that parking and we were somehow able to unlock the mystery of the alleyway, the building actually might change in scale and height and some of the issues we've heard from the neighborhood. So this is not an incidental matter because they could potentially use the
That's
whole thing.
That's where I'm headed.
But Kurt, if this was just as of right residential development, how many parking spaces would we require on the property?
I believe we'd require one per unit, one per house.
One per house.
A driveway per house as well.
Yeah, because okay. Yeah, again, the reason that the critical issues here are, does it significantly lessen the overall residential appearance and function? How does it change how does it differ? The reliance of a great deal of the remaining portion of the site not occupied by a building is occupied by a parking lot. That's not typical. So that's different. But we
So Mike, I suggest a couple of amendments to the conditions of approval and then to move denial of the appeal. And
all right, so are we, any other questions before we take a motion? Because we'll need to take a motion if someone wants to make one. But Kathleen?
Yes, I was wondering if I could make a couple of points of clarification on some of the things that were discussed here.
I don't think okay. I'm not sure you need to.
Not and, sure if
and
you need to.
The clock
okay.
is late. Why,
yeah,
why
we're
going
to make a tentative decision
okay.
today, I think. So
yeah.
I think that's
okay.
where we're headed.
Why don't we give Commissioner Fritz a chance to frame it? You'll tell us if we were out of our lane.
So what I was going to suggest as part of the motion is condition A on page 33 of the hearings officer's decision says that the design should be as approved as indicated on exhibit C1 to C5. We might add onto that unless changes to the parking are negotiated in the good neighbor agreement. And then under E, which was the one I was gnawing on at the very beginning of this hearing, to change, I very much appreciate that both sides say that they're willing to work on a good neighbor agreement, and I hope that you will be able to get one. But just in case that doesn't happen, it should say in the fourth line down, must document that the New Meadows and Bridge Meadows representatives strived to meet in good faith with the Neighborhood Association for the purpose of reaching.
Okay. So Commissioner Fritz proposes those changes. Are you making those proposals in the context of an overall motion?
In the context of with those amendments, an overall motion to deny the appeal and uphold the hearings officer's decision with those two amendments.
This would be a tentative decision. Second to that. Tentative decision with those additional amendments. Are there any further amendments to the motion before we take a vote on it? Council?
And I just want to remind you that you want to make sure that it's clear on the record that the hearing is closed. And then with the tentative decision, we have to set a date and time certain to return.
Right. We'll do that subsequent to acting on the motion. But this is the conclusion of the hearing. We're going to take a vote on a tentative decision and set a date for findings.
Actually, Mayor, can I just ask Kurt one more question?
Sure.
Could we still theoretically agree to allow no on-site parking?
We would have to revise the findings to address the parking impacts that would not, without having a parking lot, that the surrounding on-street parking would be adequate to address.
There are findings that it's not.
Yeah. All right, we're stuck with that. Okay, so roll call, please, on Commissioner Fritz's motion and those amendments that are included in it.
Saltzman?
Well, I appreciate the testimony of the neighborhood and also certainly of New Meadows and New Avenues for Youth, or Bridge Meadows and New Avenues for Youth. I'm very familiar with both organizations, know they are quality organizations. I am convinced they'll be good neighbors, and I think that, you know, there already seems to be a camaraderie between the neighbors. There is just a concern about whether New Meadows significantly alters the residential character of the neighborhood. I guess I reached the conclusion that it doesn't, and therefore I will support the recommendation of the hearings officer as amended by Commissioner Fritz. Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Well, this is one of the most interesting decisions I've read from the hearings officer. Spectacular work by Kathleen Stokes and other staff. Greg Franks should be very much commended for laying out all of the issues ahead of time and making findings as to why they were met. And major kudos to the Neighborhood Association, because it's obviously you've been through it too. You know your stuff. You laid out the issues very clearly. And I know that with the good hearts of both sides, that you'll be able to maybe make some modifications in the Good Neighbor Agreement. It's very clear that from the first design to the current one, it's much more compatible to the neighborhood, and I would expect that you may be able to find even more and make the Portsmouth neighborhood an even more wonderful place to be. And I think that the different examples of what's there right now are really evidence of why it's such a wonderful neighborhood. And thank you, for everybody, for your participation in this. Aye.
Fish.
This has been, I think, a terrific hearing. And I'm going to support the motion, but I'm going to express a couple of reservations. One is that, for me, it is significant that New Meadows has a relationship to Bridge Meadows. And I might have a different view if it was an entirely new program, different operations, with no connection to an existing use that has a good neighbor agreement that is functioning. Number two, I do think there is a concentration issue. I'm not sure we've triggered it, but I'm not sure where that line is. But I thought the appellant, who is not a lawyer and made clear to us that, still made one of the more thoughtful arguments that we've had in one of these complex cases. And I do think that's an issue. And at some point, there may be a concentration issue. I'm not sure we've reached it here, but I think we're getting to the outer limits. And finally, what matters, a factor that I think is significant for my decision-making, is the fact that there were significant changes in the design from the original proposal to the current proposal. And as the architect and the team walked us through that, I think they were substantial changes that actually, in good faith, attempted to bring back a more residential character to the development. And I think that that and the other testimony weighs in favor of denying the appeal. Aye.
Anything else?
It's a close call. I think the point has been made that people that invest in a residential neighborhood have a right to expect that it be one. The question here is significantly, and the hearings officer found that there is a difference but it's not significant given particularly the design improvements in the project that were made in under pressure from the neighborhood. So I appreciate the fact that the applicant heard those concerns and attempted to respond to them. And then it looks to me like the livability issues as well that are also addressed are going to be addressed by the good neighbor agreement and the way this project is going to be operated. So I think on balance, the hearings officer did indeed get it right, and I'll support this decision. Aye. So that's a tentative decision. Do we want to set a date for findings?
Yes, that is, or will be, October 12th at 11 a.m. time certain.
Okay, so findings will come back to us, be on the calendar then. We'll address those then. Thank you all very much.
Mayor, 2 minute break.
1 minute break. That means 2 minutes, and we will then take up the next item.